that's something we should all be learning about and making sure we know how to hear him. But well, I want to share a little bit. I've been probably for the last couple months, I've been thinking about, well, you hear all the time, the Bible is relevant for today. The Bible is relevant for today. It's relevant for your life, Pat. Even though you aren't in the Bible days, it's relevant for your life. We've heard that over and over again. And I started trying to think, how does that become a reality? How does that become a reality? And then all of a sudden, I just looked through a couple things. We looked through some of the things with King Jehoshaphat, and I've read through some of the stories, looking at like Timothy and kind of the end of Paul's life into the life of Timothy, reading through some of the things that John went through, looking at some of the things in Revelations that he interpreted, and trying to say, how does this work in my life? And I don't know what it was, but something hit me about Samson. And so a couple weeks ago, I opened up the Bible and I looked at Samson. So that's kind of the story that we're going to look at. And there's a lot of controversy over Samson. There's a lot of stories and things that we can get out of Samson, life lessons or applications that we can get. But there's one thing that just stuck out to me, and it's kind of against the grain maybe of how you would think that Samson's story should be, but that's what we're going to look at. So we're going to be looking at Judges 13. But the thing that I keep on asking about is when I look at these people in the Bible, I think of they're called Bible heroes, right? Heroes of the Bible. We've got heroes of the Bible. All these men and women in the Bible that are taught Sunday after Sunday in Sunday school lessons, that are depicted out in VeggieTale movies or some other movie. And I think, man, is my life anything like a Bible hero? And I started thinking about, I don't know anybody that's built a boat 3 football fields long. I can't find anybody here that is throwing their cane on the floor and it's becoming a snake. I don't see anybody here that got sold by their brothers to slavery and becomes the king's right-hand man. That's none of those don't go into our autobiographies or our biographies, do they? No. So the only thing that I can come up with is that we're boring, weak Christians. We don't have any good story. See? I think you're laughing because that must be true. But the fact of the matter is, it's not true at all. So we're gonna piece this story together, and I want to try to walk you through the story and help us understand. Judges 13, we're going to look at verses 4 and 5. So in verse 4, and I'm purposely not reading the beginning or the end of this because we're going to go back and look at that a little bit later, but I just want to get you thinking a little bit. So in verse 4 it says, "So be careful, you must not drink wine or any other alcoholic drink, nor eat any forbidden food. You will become pregnant and give birth to a son, and his hair must never be cut, for he will be dedicated to God as a Nazarite from birth, and he will begin to rescue Israel from the Philistines." So we're just going to stand there, okay? It's a common scripture that a common storyline that we've read. Somebody tells somebody that they're going to have a child that's going to be used by God. It happened throughout the Bible, all the way from Abraham and Sarah. It happened with Mary and Joseph, with Elizabeth and John the Baptist. We hear it all the time. So those people in the Bible, man, they must have something going on because God made sure that their parents knew that they had a plan, that God had something in store for them, okay? But the point of looking at the Bible and trying to relate it to your life is you have to sit there and say, okay, so how does that work towards me? So when I look at that, I think this lady could be like any other lady. She's just a woman. A woman that knows her faith in God, knows what God can do for her, but she's still living in a world, and we'll see in a little bit, that's just chaotic. It's not overflowing with abundance from God in their situation that they're in. And that's how we probably find ourselves like that in every situation. We don't have things overflowing in our lives all the time, do we? We don't have things in this country going 100% right all the time. We can't say that Christians are never persecuted. We can't say anything like that because it's not the reality. So the reality is this woman could be anybody. She could have been your parents, your mom. And God would have shown up to your mom and said, "This child, I have a purpose." And we know that that's true because we're going to go to a famous verse, Jeremiah 29:11. Everybody's heard that verse, so let's look at that real quick. Jeremiah 29:11. And I'm trying to go as fast as technology will let me. I was going to bring my Bible. That way I didn't. And you never want to trust everything in technology, I've heard. So, 29:11. "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope." So we hear that all the time. That could be something that's said at every Christian graduation ceremony, Christian college, Christian high school. That could be something that's said every time. You know, any time a prophet gets up on a pulpit or a man of God gets up on the pulpit, he could easily quote that scripture because everybody knows it. But the problem is, with these two scriptures, so the 4 and 5 from Judges 13, Jeremiah 29:11, we have two scriptures that one of them is very similar to what we read in the Bible all the time. So we know that it's something that does happen because it happened a lot in the Bible, that God came and he prophesied to parents that their child, a lot of times unborn, was going to be used greatly by God. And then we got the other verse that we try to apply to everybody's life, that God has a plan for you, a plan of a future and a hope, not one of destruction. But unfortunately, usually we only believe it about half the time, and only about half of us believe it that half the time. So we don't really let it sit inside of us that, man, we really do have a purpose and a purpose in this life. We know God, okay, God loves us. God sent his son to die for us. Okay, we know that, but do you really believe that he has a purpose for you? That he has a set of stepping stones that lay right next to each other? That if we just walked on those stepping stones, everything would be taken care of? That God has planned for us? Unfortunately, we don't usually look at it that way. So these are great verses. We look at them, we can say, man, that's great. God is telling this woman that she's going to have this son and he's going to help deliver his people from the Philistines. And Jeremiah, man, that's great. God has a plan for us, a plan of good, of hope, and not of destruction. Well, that's really good. But let's look at where those scriptures come out of. So in Judges 13, we'll go to that one first. Judges 13:1, we're going to see what this mother was facing, what this mother was looking at in her life. We know that there's got to be something going on because he says that he's going to deliver the Israelites from the Philistines. So in 13:1, right off the bat, we see in verse 1 that it says, "Again, the Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight, so the Lord handed them over to the Philistines, who oppressed them for 40 years. So we know God has already removed his umbrella of protection over those people because of choices that they made. They forced God's hand pretty much, that when you walk out of God's will, then God can't protect you from your enemies. So that's where these people are at. And in verse 2, "In those days, a man named Manoah from the tribe of Dan lived in the town of Zoran. His wife was unable to become pregnant, and they had no children." And then verse 3, "The angel of the Lord appeared to Manoah's wife and said, 'Even though you have been unable to have children, you will soon become pregnant and give birth to a son.'" So now we see the whole picture where this lady's coming from. And it's not uncommon nowadays to have somebody that feels like the world is coming down against them, feels like they're the outcast. And so outwardly, physically on the outside, they're being oppressed. you know, these people are being, they're treated as slaves. We read in Daniel that they, and that was another, they pulled them out and put them in Babylon, and they took these people and tried to assimilate them to the lifestyle of the Babylonians. Very much was being done in the Philistines. They took these Israelites and they said, man, let's, we got to take these people and control them. So they pulled them out. So not only are they suffering on the outside, being made to do things that probably didn't line up with their faith, what they believed, but on the inside, they were being tormented as well because they couldn't have kids. Because in those days, they didn't have Cosmo magazine telling them that you have to choose your career or a car seat. It was just, you automatically came out, and when you got married, the next thing to do was to have kids. Because that was what everybody did. Because that's how you knew that things, that your people, your tribe, were going to continue to prosper and continue to be around for years and years to come. So they feel like they probably got robbed by God, or that they did something wrong because they couldn't have children. Now, I don't know why they couldn't have children. Nowadays, we got medical testing that would come and say, okay, well, it's his fault or her fault, or it's just not in the cards, or whatever the case might be. But even nowadays, and we got kids here through the testimony of Tracy and Val that are here because God has more power than anything that the enemy would try to put on you. So they're living in a day and age that was being oppressed. They're living inside being oppressed. And if we look back and say, okay, how does that apply to us? How many of you have ever felt oppressed on the outside? The enemy's coming against you. You feel like things are just crashing down. Everything's going wrong. I just helped a guy yesterday. One of my neighbors, he comes and he knocks on the door and he says, can you come and help me run a wrench? I said, where do you want him run to? And he says, no, in my garage. I got to fix the coil on my garage door. I said, yeah, I'll come over, John. The first words out of his wife's mouth when she come out and saw that it was fixed, she goes, man, everything just happens all at once. I said, that's the way it seems to happen, doesn't it? One thing goes wrong and the next thing goes wrong. This guy's story was funny because he locked his keys in the house after he already knew that his garage door wouldn't open. So he had to cut the screen. So I said, man, you started off with one problem. Now you got two problems. And but thankfully, we helped him get it set up and all. But I thought, that's so funny that that's how everybody in the world, when you ask them when a problem comes up, everything comes at once. Problem after problem. Disaster after disaster. You know, we look at it. How many times have we seen a tornado after a tornado after a tornado? It's like, man, how do you pray for this person when this person just went through it? You got, where does the Red Cross send them? How do they know where to send them and how many to send? Everything comes at once. Well, that's the way that this world works. Everything comes at once. So they're being oppressed. We feel like we've been oppressed. How many have felt oppressed on the inside? Beat up by the enemy on the inside. You're not good enough. Man, you really failed God now. I can't believe, I thought you said you were delivered of that. I thought you said you wouldn't say anything like that. I thought you said you wouldn't think like that. Boy, man, that's hard to deal with sometimes, isn't it? We went through the Chatterbox series, but sometimes it's just by your own inside. You know, I don't need the enemy talking on my shoulder all the time because, man, I got enough thoughts in my head to fill a book, a library maybe. So you feel oppressed on the inside. These, you know, this couple, they can't have kids. We've seen it before many times in the Bible. They can't have kids or they haven't had kids yet. And I can guarantee you, in almost every single situation, it's not because they weren't trying to have kids, because they were. But things just weren't working out. So they're oppressed. They're feeling down. So, okay, well, that's good. The Lord came because they're still, even in that situation, even when people are trying to control God's people, there are still faithful inside that group. And I hope that that's where we find ourselves at when we're being told that we can't pray in a group setting or on a Capitol Hill or in a board meeting, in a town meeting, at a graduation ceremony, when we're being told that we can't do that. Hopefully we're the ones that are still being found faithful. We're not saying, well, I guess we can't do that anymore. I guess we won't have to worry about that. I got to be careful how I share my faith at work because I don't want to offend anybody, so I guess I'm just not going to share my faith at work. I don't want to be caught praying in a public park because I don't want somebody to get offended, and then all we see there is lawsuit, 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 and And, you know, everybody goes up in arms. So I'm just not going to do it. Hopefully that's not us. Because even though these people were being oppressed, they still were being found faithful. And the only way to be found faithful means that they were still doing something. So now, okay, that's in Judges. That's good. So these people were found faithful and they already came through and God said that they were going to have this son. God's going to give you a son and he's going to be the one that's going to start freeing and delivering you from your captors, from your enemy. Wow. Well, I guess the nice thing is it doesn't happen but just that one time. If we go back to Jeremiah 29, we're going to start to see the same thing. In verse 1, it talks about where these people were at. They were exiled to Babylon. Okay, so they've already been freed once from Egypt, the people of Israel. And then you start to see that they're freed, and then they start to fall away from God. They get judged by God. They get put under the control of somebody else. Then they get freed. And then next thing you know, they started to lose sight of the ultimate goal, the fact that God was there. And it's not because they didn't have prophets like Jeremiah saying, writing letters to them or people telling them that God has a plan. God has this great plan in place, that God has promises for you. It's not because they didn't hear that, but it's just the human nature took over and they let the enemy start to control what they did and how they did it. So in 29, verse 1, we start to see that story that we've already talked about many times before, and it's playing out again. Now this time they're again exiled to Babylon. Again, meaning they had already been exiled once. The queen mother, the court officials, and the other officials of Judah, and all the craftsmen and artisans had been deported from Jerusalem. So Jeremiah sent this letter to the elders of the priests and the prophet of the people who had been exiled. And in verse 4, we'll start to read the letter. This is what the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of Israel, say to all the captives. Build homes and plan to stay. This is out of the New Living, so it might sound a little bit different than what you have. But build homes and plan to stay, in verse 5. Plant gardens and eat the food that they produce. Verse 6, marry and have children, then find spouses for them so that you may have many grandchildren. Multiply, do not dwindle away, and work for the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you into the exile. Pray to the Lord for its welfare, for its welfare will determine your welfare. So we'll stop there for a second. So these people, they're being oppressed. They've been exiled. They've been taken away from their home, put into another community, and they're being controlled by people that they didn't willingly go under. But they went by the force of an army from King Nebuchadnezzar. And this is what God's telling them. Get comfortable because you're going to be here a while. Well, isn't God going to come and just deliver me? Well, it says he's got a plan, but when God tells you to get a house, plant a garden, things that take time, have children so that you can have grandchildren, that doesn't sound like a quick turnaround to me, not a 30-day walk in the park. It sounds like God's saying, you guys are going to be here for a while. So then in verse 8, it says, do not let your prophets and your fortune tellers who are with you in the land of Babylon trick you. Do not listen to their dreams because they are telling you lies in my name and I have not sent them. So now he's getting down to, okay, you better get comfortable. You're going to be here a while, but this is what you need to be wary of. Don't listen to what they're telling you when they say that I'm a prophet. Because they're saying that they're coming from my mouth, but they're not. So you're going to be here a while, and people are going to be trying to trick you, is what God's saying. You're going to be here long enough to have grandchildren, and people are going to be trying to trick you all that time. How many of us have ever felt like we've been tricked? Everybody's out to get us. And if you haven't been tricked in a while, just wait. Credit card offers will come out again. Charter Cable will send out another big thing about how they're going to make your life simpler. You know, I laugh at the bundle joke that Dad put out on that sign, Heaven's Bundle. Because I know every time that I talk to him, if it's about TV, satellite, phone, internet, cell phones, whatever, everything's bundled together, and he always laughs and says, things are not better just because they're bundled together. You are not saving me money by saying I get three services at a discounted rate, because I'm still paying the same amount of money somehow after that promotion period ends, or we're going to go through the same dance where I got to call in and complain and you're going to lower my rate. So I always laugh when I see, when I drove up and saw that sign a few weeks ago, I thought, oh gosh, here we go again. Who did he call? No. But that's the way it seems. The world is out to get us. Anytime we see somebody, a politician, take the stage, it's like, what are they going to say that's not true? Every time that some people get to a pulpit, what are they going to say that's not true? That's how some people even treat their pastors at their own churches. What's he going to say that I need to catch him on? We always look for that. What are they going to say? What are we going to hear that's not 100% right? And that's the way we live our lives. And God's saying that's okay, as long as what we're looking for is what he's really trying to say. You know, if we sit there and say, oh, everybody that says something's going to be trying to trick me up, well, that can't be true, because we should be trying to listen to what God has to say. And if we're saying that everybody, then that means that nobody's going to be able to speak the truth from God. We're going to think that it's, even in that, we're going to get tripped up. So that's why God sent guys like Jeremiah to warn them that people are going to try to trick you up. Don't listen. Don't let them trick you. Don't listen to their dreams. So thankfully in verse 10, Jeremiah 29 verse 10, he comes and he says, you'll be in Babylon for 70 years. 70 years. And when I read that, I thought, I wonder if that's why people only live to be about 78 to 85 normally. Because they can only take that oppression for so many years. And you don't start feeling oppressed by the world until you get maybe around 8 or 9, 10 years old. And then all of a sudden, the world comes on. And then, man, by 78, they're like, let's go. Lou, he's tough as nails. He's not going anywhere. He's past 78, right, sir? But we know that we don't live as long as they used to back in the Old Testament. And it's because the world's changed. So they're going to be there 70 years. Can you imagine God said you're going to be in this place for 70 years? This place that you don't have any control over. You don't have any say in how it goes. You're going to be there 70 years. But I will come to you and do for you all the good things I have promised, and I will bring you home again. That's where he says, I know the plans I have for you, plans of good and not disaster, to give you a future and a hope. And then he gives them instruction. In those days when you pray, so he's not telling them to give up on prayer, I will listen. And if you look for me wholeheartedly, you will find me, and I will be found in you. I will end your captivity and restore your fortunes, and I'll gather you out of the nation where I sent you, and will bring you home again to your own land. And there's a whole other sermon that we could go into on just on those verses, on how that's really our where we should see ourselves being here on earth, that God's placed us here, and he's going to take us home to be with him as we wholeheartedly believe in him and pray to him. But we're not going to focus on that too much. We want to just focus on the fact that we're here on this earth right now, and we have a story that we have to be living out. So they've come, they've been taken, they've been exiled. Okay, and I did some looking just to see kind of how spread out this was. So Samson's story, they were controlled by the Philistines, is about 1000 BC, somewhere in there, about 1080 BC, something like that. And then in Jeremiah, if you look at the timelines of when the Bible was written and different stories and how they line up, Jeremiah was probably somewhere around 500 BC. So 500 years have passed from the time that the Israelites were controlled by the Philistines to now we got the people from Jerusalem and Babylon being controlled. But things just kept on, it was that cycle. They kept on getting good, like I said, and then they'd fall off the wagon, so to speak, and then they'd find that they had to trust in God, and then they get picked up again, and God would bless them, and he'd carry them, and then they start falling off the wagon again, and then he says, okay, you've removed my hand. You forced me to take, not you forced me to move my hand, but you've removed my hand from where you're at, and now you have to pay for it. I can't just come in there. We always think that God should just come in there and just sweep us back under his umbrella. You know, just like if we were walking with an umbrella and it's in a rainstorm, we just think that God's going to be sitting there just pulling us back around. And the reality of it is, as we grow older, God tells us where we need to be. You know, I enjoy hearing people talk about when they change jobs or they see something. You know, I remember Linda knew that God knew where she needed to be. Even when she didn't feel comfortable, she still knew that God had her there for some reason. And what's funny is she was excited and nervous about that, but she was just excited about that as when the opportunity came for her to move somewhere else, and God put her somewhere else, and she knew that had to be there. Because in the first situation, she knew God had her there for a reason, but didn't know why. And in the second situation, after she was faithful in that, God took her and put her in the situation that she knew exactly why she needed to be there. Exactly why she needed to be there. And that's the way that we should live our lives, is say, okay, God, this is where I'm at. Just like these people in the story that Jeremiah is telling a letter to, and in the story of Samson and his parents, they're saying, okay, God, we are here, and we trust that you got us here for something. And we know that that's true because you sent this man to tell us that we're going to be here and that you're going to send us a son that's going to deliver us. So we know that it's not going to be a quick thing. It's got to be at least 12, 13, 14, 15 years before anybody's going to take this young man and believe that he's going to be able to free his people. Or you've sent us this letter and said, okay, you're going to be here a while. I'm going to have you here for 70 years. But then you're going to come and you're going to bring us home. You're going to hear us when we pray. So that's how we need to live. That's how we become a Bible hero, a hero of our faith, right here where we're at. We need to live by saying, okay, God, you've got me here at this job. You've got me here in this position. You know what? I've even had to sit down and say, okay, God, you've got me here financially. You've got me here in this house. You've got me here in the midst of these two problems. I believe you're here, God. I know that you're here. I know I don't feel like I'm out of place. So, God, you just got to come and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is where you're going to go. And unfortunately, he doesn't always come to us. Now, he came to one or two people out of this group of Israelites in the Philistine area out of how many hundreds or thousands of people? And he only came to two? So don't think that God has to come and tell you right in your ear that this is what he's got planned, that he's got something great in store. That's where our faith comes in, where we have to trust him. I believe that this man and this woman would have continued to believe, God, if it's your plan that you're going to give us a son, if it's your plan you're going to deliver us from our enemies. Because they already knew that God did it numerous times before that. And in Jeremiah, he did it numerous times between those two times. He always came and he always saved his people. And so whatever was going on around them, they knew that there had to be something that God was going to do. So one of the things that we need to look at that I see in both these stories is that God's honest with them. So we want to be a Bible hero. We want to live a story like a Bible hero. It's going to be one that people could talk about. Even though it's not that I went and I killed Goliath with a stone. or I went and I started the New Testament church, or whatever the case might be, or I was this man and now I'm this man, even though it doesn't sound as grandiose as it does when I look at the few men and women in the Bible that got documented, I believe that my life can be just like a Bible hero's life. And these are the ways that it's going to be. God was honest with them then. God's honest with me now. Has God ever told you a lie? We were just talking with the boys in Sunday school last week, and I said, there are three voices in your head, or that would come into your head, that would come and talk to you. One's going to be God, one's going to be the enemy, and one's going to be yourself. I said, and there's an easy way to tell whether it's God. God will always be good. Always. God will not tell you to do something bad. It's always going to be truthful. If he tells you, and if he gives you something, it's always going to be truthful. It's always going to be good. Even when he would put people into dire situations, God's hand could have come and taken Daniel and just lifted him right out of that lion's den. Could have taken Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and just suddenly the flames would have gone out. But that's not how God wanted to work. God wanted to prove his power to that person and to the people that were around at that time to say, God was here because there's no other way that a man would survive the night in a den full of lions. God was here because there is no way, first off, that any man would survive a burning fire in a furnace, or that they would somehow get a fourth guy to show up with them. God had to have been here. So God is always honest with them. He says, you're going to be here for a while. Build a house. Start a family. Make a garden. Enjoy what you've made. But then I'm going to be able to move my... You're going to see that my hand will begin to cover you back up again. My protection will begin to cover you back up again. I'll pull you back in, or you'll be guided back in. So I want to look at the story of Samson, because I think Samson talks a lot about how we are as human beings nowadays. Because the problem is that we look at guys like Moses, Abraham, Isaac. Some of us even try to compare ourselves to Jesus on the way we live our lives. And we do it this way. Jesus did it this way, so there's no way we can compete with that. There's no way that I'm like him. But I want to look at Samson, because I really think Samson has the human nature side of us now down. Samson has a promise from birth. How many of us were born with a promise from birth? God has a plan for us. We believe it. I hope we believe it. That God has a plan for us from birth. It's not something that he draws up after he sees how tall you get, how smart you are in school, how well you do in math over science or anything like that. He has a plan in place from the very beginning. So that's put in stone. Samson, same way. He had a plan put in stone from the very beginning, that if he were to live his life in one that pleased God, this is what the outcome of his life would be. He would deliver his people from the Philistines. So he went through life. His mother, I'm sure, told him, don't ever cut your hair. Don't ever cut your hair. This is why, don't ever cut your hair. Don't tell anybody about it, because God has kept this as a promise between you and God. Don't tell anybody. And he must have believed it, because it took a long time before the enemy was able to trick him into telling just what gave him his strength. But then you read through Samson, and there's things throughout his life that you go, what? For instance, he was told that he was going to be set aside, that he was going to be that man that God could use, because he lived based on the rules and the principles that were brought down to him, that were taught to him. So that's the way he's supposed to live, but unfortunately, he doesn't all the time. And that's just how we are. Even as we're little kids, don't do this, don't do this. You are not allowed to cross the street on your bike. That's one that we always got told. You're not allowed to cross the street. Well, mom doesn't know that I crossed the street. I mean, as long as I don't go down to the other end of the block, right? that human side of us comes out just a little bit, and we fall out of the will that we're supposed to be living in. Samson did it too. So, okay, well, Samson was still used by God. He came in. The only problem is that he wasn't supposed to marry a Philistine. But that's what he wanted, so he went after it. Well, unfortunately, God had to remove his protection. Samson got hurt. Well, I felt hurt because I felt like God didn't take care of me the way he was supposed to. Well, there's nothing that God did wrong. It's all got to be on me. Now, we go through the story of Samson. We all know that not only did they try to find out where he got his strength so many times before, but then he meets Delilah, and he's infatuated with Delilah. And the enemy says, let's try this again. I don't know if Satan really knew that he was going to get Delilah to get to trick Samson into getting the secret family recipe or secret family sauce, you know, Bush's baked beans. But Satan said, let's try it again. So they came, and Samson knew he shouldn't tell anybody. So he told her lie after lie. And every time that he told her a lie, they would come and try to get him, and he'd end up killing people. And then she started playing the guilt card and saying, well, how, don't you love me? Don't you love me? Have you ever heard that from somebody? Well, if you love me, you would do this for me. You know, if you were committed to this company, like you say you are, you would have no problem doing this. If you are a true believer in what this company says, then you would continue to buy their products. We get bombarded by that all the time with this heart pull, you know. And eventually what happens is she whittles away and Samson caves in. And maybe that's how we feel right now. I don't know where each one of you is at, but I know I felt sometimes like I have really screwed up. I have really let God down. I know this promise is from Jeremiah 29:11 is relevant for today, and I know that God has plans, and I know that God is always with me, but man, do I feel like I have just screwed up. Samson got to that point. Here he is bound. They plucked his eyes out. He's blind. All because he told them to cut my hair, and I will have no strength. So eventually, he gives it all away. He hits that rock bottom point. But the key to how our story in our lives is going to play out like a Bible hero is how every time the enemy tries to attack us, how do we respond? And it's not that we respond correctly every single time. If it was a fact that every time the enemy tried to attack us and tried to come against us, that we responded right every single time, then we're not talking about being a Bible hero, we're talking about being Jesus. Because he's the only one in the Bible that ever lived that perfect life. But it's how do we respond? And that's part of sharing our testimony. Is those are the things that we need to be able to share. Like, hey, yeah, this came against me, but this is how I responded. You know, I will never sit there and say that God can't heal anybody. Not because of my own life, but because I was in a church service with Dawn Henning, and I had seen her struggling with MS, and I can still remember the day that we saw her walk through the church on her own strength. And those are things that there's no way that somebody can tell me God does not heal people nowadays. That's why. There's no way that God can tell me that God doesn't deliver people from things because he's delivered things out of my life. He's helped me with struggles in my life. There's no way that somebody could tell me that God doesn't provide for you because he's provided for things in my life. And that's the testimony. And it's similar to how Samson should have lived. Even King David had problems, had moral failures, what we would call them nowadays. But he's a Bible hero, right? But he had moral failures? Well, he can't be a Bible hero. That's what the world would try to say. But we as Christians need to know that the hero of the faith is not that they lived the perfect life, but it's how they responded when they screwed up. And that's my encouragement, because we all want to be like a Bible hero. We all want to live this strong life of faith. And every time we get down, we feel like we did something wrong. It's like, you know, it'd be kind of like if you were ever pedaling up a hill. Even though you're still moving forward, if your feet stop going the same speed as what they were, don't you feel like you start going backwards? Because you know what's going to happen. If I keep this progression up, pretty soon that's what's going to happen. I'm going to start going down the hill backwards. So it's how we respond. How we respond to our faith. And finally, in the story of Samson, here he is. He was captive for 20 years. So if we do a timeline on that, he lived about probably close to half of his life captive by the very same people that he was supposed to be setting free. And then at the very end of it, they end up winning and they end up coming and being able to cut his hair and tie him up. See, he was captive way before they bound him, because he was stuck in that. The things of that world that were going on around him started to become bigger than the things that God had promised. And if we feel like we're captive, that's exactly why. Because we've put precedence over things of God. Whether it be, unfortunately, sometimes even family can put precedence over things of God. And it doesn't sound like it's very, well, some people might go through that, but there are pastors. There are major ministry heads, evangelists, and that they struggle with putting family before God, because that's one of those heartstrings that you get tugged on. So Samson started off, he could have been mightily used by God. God proved his strength when he killed the lion as they were walking into the city. But those things around him, he started to compromise, and things around him started to come, and he started to say, well, that's not as bad as it looks. And by the time it's all said and done, it says in the Bible that he was sleeping with a prostitute. He was womanizing. He was going after women out of lustful desire. So we can take from Samson that God had this wonderful plan in place. He had a plan that was going to not only affect Samson's life, but the life of every Israelite at that time and after. And I don't know what the rest of the Bible would have looked like had Samson lived that life perfectly, the way that God had destined him to live it. And God doesn't just give up on Samson, even all the way at the end. God could have said, Samson, I wash my hands of you. You had this plan, I had this purpose for you, but you didn't live up to it. You didn't walk with me. You pretty much rejected me and my word, my commandments that I had given to you. So whatever happens to you, happens to you. But even at the very end, Samson knew that God still had that plan, that purpose. And at the very end of his life, tethered to two pillars, he prayed, God, just give me the strength, even though it's going to take my own life, give me the strength to kill these men that came and captured me. Even though it's my life too, I want you to come and move right now. And God probably went, man, Samson, if you would have just had that heart, all those years before that, say 25 years, 30 years before that, if you would have just had that heart and everything that you did, things would be so much differently. And that's where we have to be at. A challenge that I would have for you, and it's a challenge that I'm having to deal with even on my own, and I know it's one that we all deal with no matter where you're at, I challenge you to start thinking about your life. There's two things that we have to do. First off, we have to believe that from the very beginning, God had a plan for us, a purpose that he put us here on this world. Now, we know that he made human mankind, he made Adam and Eve to worship him. Okay, so we should be doing that. But even Adam, not only worshiping him, what was Adam's job? Was to tend to the garden. He was made to worship God in everything he did, but to tend to the garden. Noah was made to build an ark. Moses was made to carry out the story of being able to bring his people out of Egypt. John the Baptist was made to prepare the way for Jesus Christ. Saul, whether he believed it or not at the time, was made because God needed somebody that he could take from the polar opposite of Christianity and put as the forefront of what humankind would see as the Christian faith of today. He had a plan for all of those people. Why the heck wouldn't he have a plan for you? And the thing is that we feel, oh, well, I'm just too old to start living out the life that God has. Well, God doesn't want you to start over from scratch. If God had a plan that you would have eventually gone through Bible school and you're 60 years old, I don't think God's going to tell you to go and sign up for Bible school. But I believe that God can, when you say, God, you've got a plan and I want to start living like that, you'll start to see that your life and his plan will start merging together. Yeah, did you miss out on some things? Of course. Could it have been 100 times better? Probably. But don't focus on that because that's where the enemy's going to come in. God just says, I have a plan for you. And all I want you to do is just want to live out that plan. It's going to make you uncomfortable, I know. But I got a plan for you. It's going to mean that you're going to have to give up this or give up that. I know, but I got this plan for you. It's kind of like if your earthly father were to say, when you turn 16, I want to give you the keys to the car. But at 15 and a half, I were to go, I'm scared to drive. Yeah, but I want to give you the car. But I'm scared to drive. Well, yeah, but I want to give you the car. Don't you understand what that means? Don't you understand what I've done in order to make sure that that would happen? Well, but I don't like the color. But it's a car, you know? Man, sometimes that's how we respond. And God doesn't turn his back on us. But he says, okay, I mean, I got this for you. But it's up to you, I guess. So we need to know that he's got that plan. And the second thing, once we know that he's got a plan, and if you don't know that he's got a plan for you, then we got to pray. We got to pray as a church that everybody that walks through this door would find the understanding that God has a plan for you. We say it all the time. God has a plan for your life, and he will heal your hurts. But we have to make sure that we believe it. God has a plan for me. God has a plan for you. And after that, now comes the part where we have to say, God, no matter what, 100%, I want you in control. I want to give up my control and let you have control of my life. Is it going to be uncomfortable, like I said? Yes. Is it going to mean that you're going to have to change the ways you do things? Of course, because if you didn't have to change the way you did things, you'd already be under his plan. You know, we were talking about it, I think it was a Wednesday night a couple months back, and it hit me like, that must be just like Donald Trump must think. Here he builds this big organization, and these kids come out, and we call them, you know, they come out with a silver spoon in their mouth. Well, the reality of it is, yeah, they do. They come out, and the minute that they're born, their father, Donald Trump, has this plan that these are the kids, these are the second generation of this organization I've started. And it's not just Donald Trump. Think of any sports team that you know of. These are the second generation that are going to carry on this legacy. A company. Man, do you think Henry Ford would have thought that his company would be around to this day? Probably not. Because others around failed and failed miserably very quickly. But think about that. Sam Walton's the same way. Think of all these guys that started these big companies from little, you know, peanuts. And as their kids were born, as their kids grew up, they had great plans. Well, that's the way our God is, our daddy is. That the minute he started thinking about us, not the minute that we found out that he found out that our mom was pregnant, because he already knew that our mom was going to have us, the minute he started thinking about us, he said, man, Linda, she's going to do this, 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 this. Willie, he's going to do this, 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 this. Pat's going to do this, 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 this. All of us here, he said, they're going to do this, 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 and this. This is your plan. This is your destiny, and this is what I have for you. And unfortunately, we come out and we say, well, I want to have a little bit of control. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. So we have to sit there and say, God, I admit, I know you have a plan. And I need to come to you and I need to say, God, take 100% control. If I'm giving you 90 now, help me figure out how to give up that 10%. If I'm giving you 50 now, Lord, help me figure out how I can give up that 50. If I'm giving you 10, show me how I can start giving you up some of that 90 and giving you more and more control. And that can only come through you. I can't give you the magic potion of how to give up control, but only God can work through you, and you have to make that choice. And the other thing that we have to remember is that we're all looking at it together. So if you're going through something and you say, man, he looks like he's got it together in this area. I don't know why he doesn't worry about money. He doesn't worry about transportation. He doesn't worry about this. Well, guess what? Go ask. Go ask. Say, hey, I noticed that you don't worry about this. Why? In that series that we're going to start on Sunday mornings in Sunday school, they start the whole thing off, and he's talking about how he went through this day and just praying, God, just get me through this. God, get me through this day. And at the end of the day, his boss comes up and says, man, that was a day. How did you keep it together? And he started sharing his testimony. That's what we need to be like. And as Christians, if we can't go and say, you know what, Lou, there's a lot that I could learn from you. How did you manage to do this or stay like this after all these years in this type of a business, whatever, with this going on in your family, how did you remain there? And as a Christian, we should be willing to say, I don't know. I guess I'm just lucky. No, we should be able to say that God gave me the strength. It was only because I knew that if I didn't rely on God, I couldn't rely on anybody. So I figured I might as well rely on God. And he pulled me through. And I said, God, I can't control the situation. You got to get me through it. All of a sudden, light bulbs are going to start going off in people's heads here in the church. Oh my gosh, you mean if I give God control, he's going to take care of it? Well, yeah. And if we can't start to do that as a body at the spot that we're at now, there is no way that a new person coming in this door that doesn't have any control in God's hand is going to be able to see that these people have it all under control to the point where they trust God. They're going to see that we're failing because they're going to be more thought process-wise and looking and saying, man, that person looks like he's got it all together. He ain't got it all together. I can just see he's got problems. I don't know what they are, but he's just got problems. You know, he might be putting on a good front. But if we sit there and say, man, I've got problems and I'm dealing with this or I've got this going on and I'm just being honest with you. Well, that's all God is. God's just honest with us, right? That's when people are going to start to get changed when they come in the door. So this is what I see, what I hope that you can take away, because, yeah, Samson screwed up. Well, guess what? I feel like I'm part of a recovery group or something like that. My name is TJ, and I struggle with sin. My name is TJ, and I haven't lived the perfect life. My name is TJ, and whatever. I screwed up just like Samson screws up. But I know that God has this plan. And if I learn to give God 100% control, I know that that plan is going to be carried out to a T. And that's all I want to do. So it's going to be hard, but we're with you. Because we're being twisted and twerked just a little bit too. But he still, this is the thing that keeps on coming over. He still loves me enough, because when I think that things should go quickly and God says, I can't take care of it quickly, you're going to have to deal with it. Now, I wouldn't have said this when I was 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old, getting grounded, getting punished. But now I know, because of the way that I have to deal with my children, that I love them enough to punish them to make sure that they know right from wrong. God's saying, I love you enough that you have to go through this, but I'm right there with you, but you have to go through this because I love you enough to let you understand that there are consequences for your mistakes, for your actions, for your choices. And that's what Samson had to do. Even though I die, Lord, give me the strength one more time. And that's what we should be doing. Lord, even though I'm uncomfortable, even though it's going to be hard to get from here to here because I screwed up financially, I screwed up here, I screwed up here, I got to rebuild relationships and family, whatever the case might be, even though it's going to be uncomfortable and I'm going to have to deal with it, I want that end goal. You think that's something worth living for, that end goal? I don't know if he's got Cadillacs in your future or not. I don't know if he's got big mansions. But I do know that no matter where it is and what it is 100 times better than where we're at right now. Because it can only get better. Amen? Let's go ahead and just stand up and we'll pray here. Father,